town on the wide open shore. Oh, I must confess I was drawn, to the ocean. I thought it spoke to me. It said, look at us, we're not churches, not schools, not skating ponds, swimming pools. And we have lost people, haven't we, though? What the ocean could know of a body. And that's when I came back to town. This town is a song about you. You don't know how lucky you are. You don't know how much I adore you. You are a welcoming back from the ocean. With my books and my papers, I went to the rocks by the ocean. But the weather changed quickly. Oh, the ocean said, what are you trying to find? I don't care, I'm not kind. I have bludgeoned your sailors. I've spat out their keepsakes. Oh, it's ashes to ashes, but always the ocean. But the ocean can't come to this town. This town is a song about you. You don't know how lucky you are. You don't know how much I adore you. You are a welcoming back from the ocean. La la. Can swallow you whole. I have a good and I have an evil. I thought the ocean thought nothing. You are a welcoming back from the ocean. I didn't go back today. I wanted to show you that I was more land than water. I went to pick flowers. I brought them to you. Look at me, look at them. With their salt up the stem. But you frown when I smile. Then I try to arrange them. You said, let me tell you the song of this town. You said everything closes at five. After that, well, you just got the bars. You don't know how precious you are. Walking around with your little shoes dangling. I am the one who lives with the ocean. It's where we came from, you know. And sometimes I just wanna go back. After a day we drink till we're drowning. Walk to the ocean, waiting with our work boots. Wait in our work boots, try to finish the job. You don't know how precious you are. I am the one who lives with the ocean. You don't know how. I am the one. You don't know how. I am the one. La, la.
music there from Dar Williams, The Ocean. You are listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM. I'm Valerie Richardson, and I'm joined on the line right now by Dar Williams. Hi, Dar. How are you today?
Very good, thanks.
Very excited to speak with you. I was just speaking to another musician, Molly Venter, and I mentioned that I was going to be speaking with you at 6:05, and she was just saying how much your music meant to her as she was coming of age and as a musician.
And that's exciting. Thank you.
And as I think for a lot of the WPKN listening audience, I've been listening to your music since you started, and as a young woman, and it's just really exciting to speak with you. So you're going to be performing. You're going to be at the International Festival of Arts and Ideas in New Haven on the 17th of June at 3:00, but you are going to be talking and not singing about a new book, What I Found in a Thousand Towns. Why don't you talk about the book?
Okay. if they want me to do a song or two, sometimes people are like, what are you doing reading a book? What? so I try to mix it up.
But, oh, good, good.
The book was really the culmination of 20 years of travel and seeing the United States coming back from a lot of decline in its downtowns, whether city downtowns or town downtowns, and kind of thinking, what is it that allows these places to come back this way, and actually better than before, because now in the 21st century, they're more worldly, more accepting of the world, more aware of, you know, have and have nots and how to bridge everything that's good about them to help their neighbors. So I isolated these sort of mechanisms that got people to really start communicating with each other. Because I always thought this whole idea that we're just supposed to want peace and harmony and love and we just go out and make that happen was, you know, ridiculous and impossible. So I developed this term called positive proximity, which is that experience of that proximity to others is a good thing more than a bad thing. You know, it's not just everybody inconveniencing you or people being morons. It's like people are different than I am. They live all around me. And we kind of discover who does what well and not. And we get stuff done. And the next thing you know, we've got great schools. We've got beautiful parks. We've got festivals. And people who love living here. So the book was just identifying what makes that positive proximity wheel start rolling forward. And it was, you know, there's certain kinds of spaces that get people talking to each other. Like I recommend a second room in cafes if you have the space to, you know, clear out even a small space for people to sit and hang out and have quieter conversations and longer conversations and maybe a poetry reading or something like that. And then, you know, dog parks, I think, are great because they get strangers talking to each other. And the other thing I found was that when people have projects that they're involved with that have to do with their town's identity, so their food, the beauty of their nature, their waterfronts or their history or their culture, that's a great way to get out side and say, I'm interested in this, who else is interested? And then the next thing you know, you're working on other projects too. And then the third thing I found was translation, which was sort of how we present ourselves to each other and to the world, like what are our signs and our media, like PKN. And I mean, PKN is a great example of good translation because it's such a committed community radio station and it allows people access in and it allows information to get out. So, you know, good translation is also a very important part of positive proximity. Those are the three things I identified and basically just said, here are examples of towns that were all on the downturn and all turned themselves around through, you know, looking at their history, their nature, their food, you know, not by just saying, let's go out and put our differences aside and get along. Because that's impossible. So that's what the book was about. And it's really been lovely to talk with people about how they've been able to find their way outside of their houses and into their town centers. You know, there's a lot of common ground to explore.
Yeah, I've had that sense, too, of just this coming back together of people. You know, there was a book that came out in the, I think in the 80s or 90s, called Bowling Alone, The Collapse and Revival of American Community. And it was a really dark book, and basically around the metaphor of bowling, that no one was, people were not going out and engaging in community anymore. So your book is the antidote to that, I think.
It is an antidote. And that was when I first came across, you know, a friend of mine said, you know, proximity determines our relationships. And I was like, well, sometimes in a really negative way. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. That's what I've been seeing for the last 20 years. When people can get past this idea that proximity is this inconvenience and an invasion of privacy, they can do incredible things. And they don't have the same politics. They don't have any of those things. But they just find ways to dovetail their skills and you know, so anyway, I talked to my friend who introduced me to this idea of proximity, and I said, what is this thing that I've just discovered that towns do well? And he said, it's called social capital, and it's like a bank account, just like financial capital, political capital. It's the social capital is that stored up goodwill, that sense of goodwill in communities. And he said, the biggest guy who studied that is Robert Putnam, who wrote Bowling Alone.
Oh.
And so, but I didn't read Bowling Alone first. I read something called Better Together, where he explores how great it is when certain partnerships get formed in certain cities, like when there was a garbage problem in a community that with a lot of different incomes and different backgrounds. But people were so, you know, wanting to deal with this garbage problem that they found all these different ways to address it together. And then they discovered themselves as a community. And Liz Lerman did a beautiful dance up in Portland, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, apparently, where she joined a lot of the bohemians with people who worked on in the big shipbuilding yard and kind of united these worlds of artists and builders and old school, new school stuff. So he really, he went to the hilt to dispel Bowling Alone, too. And you know, we're not going to be joining clubs as much anymore, necessarily. But what we are doing is finding our ways into local food events, farmers markets, you know, clothing swaps, just practical things, community gardens. We just put in a community herb garden in our town, and I started it, but the Girl Scouts took over, and we're bringing in all sorts of cool people, and we're dedicating it to the guy who wrote Matilda who died. And it's a really, it's a wonderful thing to see that there are new things. You know, we're not bowling as much for sure, but there are other ways that we're arranging ourselves around, you know, the campfires of our communities.
I saw you in concert in the Ridgefield Playhouse a couple years ago, and and you were talking about the book that you were working on it at that time. So I have not read it, and I read that you were going to be speaking at the Arts and Ideas Festival, I was very excited to now have a chance to read the book. So I look forward to that. I think the person you need to talk to is Jane Fonda, and I just read she just turned 80 recently, and she was talking about how she goes out. And I'm not sure how she finds these areas. Maybe they're local to her, but places where she knows that there's a large, there was a large amount of support for our current president. And she knocks on doors and just to talk to people and listen to them, which I think is amazing. But I think what you're talking about, though, is that we do have these places where we would just normally meet, whether it's a farmer's market or a garden or these other things of our current culture that bring us to the town center, sort of.
Yeah. In fact, I think that it's that thing that Jane Fonda is doing, you know, that's Jane Fonda. And I think a lot of people think that that is the way, like, okay, I have to become that person who can knock on the door and, you know, learn about another person and appreciate the differences and understand where they're coming from. And that is a beautiful thing when it happens. But I can think of so many, possibly the majority of people who don't have the time, inclination, or sociability, patience to go out and find out about other people for the sake of learning about them. Especially, you know, I've met people with very different politics than I have. And a lot of times I'll come to an understanding, but they're really upsetting. Like, they'll say things that are really upsetting, and I don't know how to appreciate them at all. It's bigoted, and it's, you know, but when you are working side by side with people to put on, like, let's say a concert, because I see that a lot. I see shy people who can't really talk that much. You know, they'll shyly say, I listened to your record over and over again. And then they'll, like, disappear back into the file cabinets. And that's how they contribute to my concert. Or you have a lighting person. A lot of people are really shy or, you know, awkward. So this allows them to learn about the political landscape as well as all the other kinds of social landscapes in the context of what they are contributing, which automatically relaxes them a little bit. Because if, you know, when in doubt, they can just do what they do well, make the brownies, and learn about the world on their own terms and decide what they think and feel about it. They just have to get outside their doors, and into, you know, the social reality outside of the internet. And they just do it really beautifully. There's one guy I heard about who was growing flowers and, you know, side by side with people for a kind of a town beautification project. And he was very shy, but he listened and he talked and he talked and listened, and he ended up running for town council, which is apparently not in his personality at all. But he felt strongly, and he realized that he could withstand, you know, the heat, and he jumped in. And I love those stories. As much as I love the Jane Fonda stories, I also love the accidental, you know, the accidental citizen of the year. There are a lot of those out there, and that's through projects that they discover and the town discovers, you know, their gold, their contributions.
I'm speaking with Dara Williams. You're listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM, online at WPKN.org. I'm Valerie Richardson. Dara Williams is talking about her new book, which is called What I Found in a Thousand Towns. She is going to be speaking on Sunday, June 17th, as part of the New Haven Arts and Ideas Festival, and she will be talking at 3 o'clock at the Yale Art Gallery, where I work, coincidentally. I didn't ask you when we came on the air what your time limit is. Do we have another, like, 10 minutes or so?
Terrific.
Okay, great. So what are some of the towns that you found where this phenomenon of decline and revival have really been strong?
Well, I found it all over the place, and I started to write theme by theme. You know, I wrote about how in Booth Bay Harbor, after my gig, people invited me up to this old bar that they had preserved and kind of preserved the old, weird, early 20th century spirit of it, you know. And I was writing about the cafe I found in Sisters, Oregon. And my editor said, I feel sick. I can't. This is really dizzy making, you know, to talk about Alaska next to Florida. She said, pick a city for each theme. And I was like, never, that will never happen. But sure enough, there were these cities that really beautifully demonstrated each theme. So Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, was a classic steel mill town. Everything closed almost overnight. This guy told me about, you know, lines of lunch bags across the counters at the end of each shift. And overnight, no more bags, no more shifts, no, you know, just everything closed. And they had some, at first, very committed citizens who created made a historical district out of Phoenixville to preserve its architecture and its feel. So that takes a little bit of expertise. But then, you know, very ordinary folks like me, you know, started to fill in these buildings with their stories. And so Phoenixville is an example of history. Phoenixville is a great example of everything to me. That's sort of it's a classic example of positive proximity. But they started to fill up the Colonial Theater, which was an old vaudeville theater, with movies that, you know, very, very vaudeville-like, not highbrow, lots of movies that they would play at the movie house. And then they started at the Colonial Theater to celebrate a piece of their history. So what they really did well was going into their history, their historic designation, the Colonial Theater Vaudeville House coming back, owned by the citizens. Then they had an event that delves into their history, which is called Blobfest, because the Blob was filmed there. And they totally celebrate sci-fi stuff. And they have sci-fi lecturers, and they have a big celebration of the blob. And then because in the 70s, I think, ceramicists started to come in, a lot of potters, they decided to have this beautiful burning of a phoenix and a giant phoenix bonfire, because it's Phoenixville. And when the phoenix collapses, it collapses onto these little clay birds and cooks the clay birds.
Oh my.
That they dig out in the morning that all these people can make. So it's that sense of their history, recent, mid-century, 19th century, is what brought them back. And everyone loves living in Phoenixville. And the local businesses all benefit from the Firebird Festival and Blobfest and all these events that came out of their history. And the businesses collaborate together because they've had such, you know, they always do best when they're working together on these events. So it's a kind of a positive, it's a, you know, perpetual motion machine of people finding a way to go a little bit out of their way, but not out of their comfort zone, to be citizens.
We're broadcasting from Bridgeport, which is a city that's had a lot of challenges. And there's a wonderful woman who is very involved in the local community, Suzanne Ketchmar, who runs City Lights Gallery. It's a nonprofit gallery, and she's done a lot of the things that you're talking about. I think just intuitively, she's they've recently started a flea market once a month or so, and she does parades and just all these great things that sort of draw people out and get them excited about coming to the city to do things.
It's great. She is what I call a conscious bridger.
Ah, okay. There you go.
So, you know, in the book, I'm like, you know, I don't really want to, you know, the books, there's a lot of books that talk about outstanding citizens and outstanding examples of things, and they're really intimidating. And so I didn't want to go into that sort of exceptionalism. You know, this person was so exceptional and found the 26th hour of the day. But it's just true that there are certain individuals who get a lot of joy out of connecting, bridging people and things in their community and find opportunities to do so. And especially when they feel like, you know, they're helping the underdog, you know, they're helping people find their way up and out of these challenges that we face. She's clearly one of them. And that's all I say is what a community can do when they encounter a conscious bridger is celebrate that person and follow. If she tells you to go, you know, take out that hose and water that garden, she knows what she's talking about. You should just do it.
Right.
To be honest, without those kinds of citizens, I'm not sure if cities can kind of pull themselves out of some of the things that were thrown at it in the 20th century.
Well, and you did say the word challenges, and so life is not all farmers markets and coming together for celebrations. Towns have poverty. Towns have, and I'm not sure if I'm remembering this correctly, but I played before we came into the interview the ocean, which I think is just such a beautiful song. And do I remember you saying that this was actually about drug abuse?
Yeah, it's about a bunch of heroin addicts.
Yeah.
So you know, and here I come into this town and I'm all like, oh, look at you, you're so quiet and thoughtful. And no, they were heroin addicts. But and it was really, really sad. I mean, it was a lot of lovely kids and with just a lot of access and not a lot of education about how, you know, yes, when you snort it, it's still addictive and stuff like that. So so corruption, drugs, and some other things are will hold a town back. But you know, one thing that I can say at least, and hopefully it's not too much of just a little Band-Aid, but one thing that is the most destructive thing, I think, is believing the narrative of division that's thrown at your town when somebody says, look at you, what a bunch of morons, can't get anything done. Look how divided you are. Look how divided. Why can't you be more united? Why can't you put your differences aside? How are you going to put your differences aside if you don't believe in your community, don't know where to meet people, and, you know, have a highly partisan attitude, which is understandable at this time in history? So I find the narrative of division, like, why can't you get your act together, when there's no space or place or reason even to get together, I find believing that division narrative to be really dangerous. So to say, we're not going to just get along overnight. I don't know anybody around me. I'll create, you know, the second room. I'm going to go to this cafe owner and see if we can sweep out that really large closet and turn it into sort of a weird little backspace. you know, I'm going to ask. There's one great coffee house I went to recently, there's a whole downstairs that's just filled with junk. And I just thought, why don't you clear out the downstairs and have all sorts of things, you know, poetry writing sessions. And you know, you've got this great reputation as a coffee house. Why don't you build on that and use this auxiliary space? You know, so maybe you're the person who encourages auxiliary spaces to open up to be, you know, just places for depressed teenagers to go write poetry or something. And this is to say, the good thing about positive proximity is that I've often seen in the most successful towns that have that wheel turning of people really enjoying living in a community and wanting to contribute, that they will look to the perimeters and to the edges and say, I'm so proud to live here that I can't stand the fact that those people over there who seem so depressed and stuck, you know, can't benefit from all this great stuff we have. So why don't we, you know, create an access through different kinds of music, different kinds of invitations, different kinds of food, cheaper food, community gardens where they don't feel like we're a bunch of, you know, silly 19th century farmers, where people really feel welcome to join us in our community gardening. You know, cheaper farmers markets, people are finding, you know, people are creating more access to farmers markets. Positive proximity creates this sort of ethos of wanting to reach out to every member of your community. That's another good thing that I've seen happening in towns. But the most destructive thing is believing that, you know, you just can't grow up and get along. We're not going to grow up and get along without something in place that makes us voluntarily, easy breezy, do it.
Right. It's sort of ironic that you are talking, we'll be speaking in New Haven next week, because New Haven is definitely a city where a lot of the 60s and 70s urban revival ideas were tried and failed. And these included ideas like taking interstates through ethnic neighborhoods and dividing. And there are literally streets in New Haven that one side is on one side of the highway, and then there's another side on the other side of the highway, and they don't connect. And New Haven has recently taken down some of that, so they are trying to reconnect the city. But
I think a lot of cities in Connecticut, for some reason, I think more in Connecticut than most other states I've encountered, have this city divided by a highway that has created issues for those cities. You know, Hartford has really had to deal with that. Waterbury's had to deal with that, and New Haven. So, and these are, you know, Connecticut is just chock full of interesting, lots of history, lots of incredibly intelligent people, a lot of goodwill. And I feel like these highways have been like, wow, like this is a study in how much of a highway can fragment a city or a culture. It's worth conversations about either taking things down, putting them underground, or even just building big aerial bridges, something to because you'll get totally different, you know, incomes on either side of these things and highways. And you're just swimming upstream. It's tough. It's doable, but it's tough to overcome.
So are you touring around a lot with this book? Are you doing a lot of speaking engagements?
I have been. I mean, I'll bring my guitar because, as I said, people are like, "What are you? What's this book thing?" But so I'll sing a couple of songs. But I spoke at a downtown planning conference in Boise. I did an event in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I'm gonna. I headed up to Hartford. They were talking about historical preservation, and it's a fantastic group of people who are really trying to figure out how history, the lovers of history, can help people who are doing revitalization, you know, real grassroots revitalization in towns and cities. So I get to see the best of the best, all the urban planners who are coming away from running a highway through the middle of the city, who are into helping people through design find their way back to their town centers, to their histories, and to their, you know, common design, are the ones that I've been meeting.
Well, it's very fascinating. I look forward to seeing you next Sunday. And I have been speaking with Dar Williams, a wonderful singer-songwriter who, as I said, we've been playing your music since your music started coming out. In fact, I think you were good friends with Steve Allison, who...
I was.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. No, PKN has been so great to me. So yes, it's true since the beginning.
Yes, and I look forward now to reading your book. And you know, it's interesting because a lot of singer songwriter or people who tour, that they will end up having a lot of albums about touring, about traveling. So you sort of have funneled that into a different direction.
Right. I mean, this is basically me saying, yes, I did a lot of traveling, but I also noticed a lot of stuff while I was doing that traveling. And a lot of places I traveled to, I went back to, you know, I've been to New Haven, you know, 15 times maybe over the years. I've played 10 different concerts, but also, you know, been to the school and spoke at the master's, you know, for a master's tea. And I questioned, you know, I think, what is going on with New Haven? How is this going with New Haven? Lots of good inroads to harmonizing the wealth of that city have been happening. You know, people have interesting efforts to try to integrate, you know, Yale into New Haven. Like, places like that, I just keep on watching how they're evolving or, you know, stumbling or trying and like people that you know, and I love that. I just love the way I love so many places and get to see them in time lapse. So, yeah, it's not just me on the tour bus. I get to actually land and check it out.
Very, very cool. Well, congratulations on the book. The book is What I Found in 1,000 Towns, and Dar is going to be speaking as part of the International Festival of Arts and Ideas next Sunday, June the 17th at 1:30 p.m., and that is taking place at the Yale Art Gallery. You can find out more information about all the events at artidea.org. Thank you so much. It's really been a fun conversation.
Thanks, Valerie.
Okay, bye-bye. And you are listening to listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM. We are online at WPKN.org. I'm Valerie Richardson, and I will be here for another 15 minutes or so playing music. We'll go to one more Dar Williams song right after this. And just before 7 o'clock, 6:55, we have local news. 7 o'clock, national and international news. 7:30, This Way Out. And at 8 o'clock tonight, no, I think actually I heard Luis is going to be a little bit late, so you might be having some surprise hosts at 8 o'clock tonight. And then Luis Luna will be along at 11 o'clock. It will be Art Venable. And thank you for listening. Our website at WPKN.org, you can find out that schedule. You can find out what's happening tomorrow if you want to, or later on this week. And we, all of our shows are put into archives for 2 weeks. You can hear something that you want to hear again. You can check out something that you might have missed like the New Haven Maven show yesterday. I have to say it was really great at noon yesterday. I listened to that. I had the day off. And they were talking about retirement and living the dream. So that show, along with many of our other interviews and spoken word shows, do become podcasts. You can find out more about that at our website. You can also make a contribution either one time, or you can become a sustaining supporter. A little bit of money a month comes out of your however you wish to pay, and you can then over the course of the year you can find out that you've been giving a lot of money to help keep us going, and we know that you are a supporter and we can depend on you. So that's a great thing. And we also are sending out these great membership cards. So if you become a sustaining supporter, you will get a card. It more than pays for itself. You can go to a lot of cool restaurants throughout Southern Connecticut and get 2-for-1 meals, get discounts, get into different events or different cultural institutions. So you find out more at WPKN.org. Okay, so more music from Darb Williams, and we'll continue on.
I've never had a way with women, but the hills of Iowa make me wish that I could. And I've never found a way to say I love you, but if chance came by, oh, I would. But way back where I come from, we never mean to bother. We don't like to make our passions other people's concern. And we walk in the world of safe people, and at night we walk into our houses and burn. How I long to fall just a little bit, to dance out of the lights and stray from the light. But I feel that to fall in love with you is to fall from a great and gruesome height. So you know I asked a friend about it on a bad day. Her husband had just left her. She sat down on the chair he'd left behind. She said, what is love? Where did it get me? Whoever thought of love is no friend of mine. Once I had everything, I gave it up for the shoulder of your driveway and the words I've never felt. And so for you, I came this far across the tracks, 10 miles above the limit and with no seatbelt. And I'd do it again. For tonight, I went running through the screen doors of discretion, for I woke up from a nightmare that I could not stand to see. You were wandering out on the hills of Iowa, and you were not thinking of me. Oh, 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 I
Song from Dar Williams, closing out our discussion about her book. This is listener-supported WPKN in Bridgeport at 89.5 FM. We're online at WPKN.org.